the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love it. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermon Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Open up your heart, what do you feel? Open up your heart, what do you feel? Is it real? Yeah. The Big Bang may be a million years away. Oh. But I can't think of a better time to say.
Back at the races. Top of the hour. Seth Merrow will join us in a little bit. And right now, Bill Downs. Go back to Indiana after last week, the Open Company action, the Caesars and the Indiana Grand. We talked to Wayne Catalano on Monday, Winter Sunset, a winner on the girls' race. The boys' race was a little bit more... how should we say it, Bill? It was a little more contentious. Four horses at the wire, right? And it went upstairs to the stewards. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it did go up to the stewards, but I think it was unfortunately, I think the horse had to come down. We're talking about Spectacular Gem, who went off at a very big price in that race, and unfortunately, you know, he came out there in deep stretch and, you know, kind of interfered with the two horse in that race. I'll get it for a second. Clint Maroon. And he really had to come down, and, you know, Carew's got kissed into the wind, and, he put in a pretty good, wasn't an undeserving winner. Carew's made a a strong late rally and almost got up for the win, but got kissed into the win due to the DQ of Spectacular Jim for James Baker.
Yeah, and I reached out to Jimmy because I felt terrible, and you know, that's a horse that he and his wife own, and
yeah,
you know, to basically, I mean, it cost cost him $100,000.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a tough one, and you know, he was not he was stoic. Let's just say that he knew he was coming down, and. You know, you could just see. It's funny. I asked Wayne Catalano himself, because, of course, Wayne sent out Clinton Maroon. And
right.
There was a chance for him and son-in-law Channing Hill to sweep the two races. And I said, you know, what's going on in the jock's mind there, Wayne, when he's flailing away a little left-handed? And Wayne said, you know, you don't. He did not blame Declan Cannon either. He said, you know, you're trying to win, and if you're going left-handed, you just it your adrenaline and everything else, and it's not that easy to and obviously he didn't have room to switch sticks. He couldn't have gone to his right hand, but I don't know. I thought if he just had ridden through the wire, if he just had hand ridden even, I thought that. Spectacular Gem was going to prevail anyway.
Yeah, you know, it would have been interesting. I mean, I'm just looking at the chart once again. He was in front of Carruz by a nose, and then it was a head, then it was a neck, and so, you know, that shows you all four horses were within a half length there at the end, and you know, any little infraction, if you will, is going to be magnified when you got the four horses at the finish like that, and yeah, it would have been interesting, and you know, especially for a jockey, I guess if you're gonna, I take the chance, but you know, when the real money's on the line, like in a $200,000 stakes race, you're gonna ride it. You do everything you possibly can to get up for the win, as opposed to, let's say, just, you know, a maiden claim or something like that. So I have no, you know, qualms with what Declan tried to do in the race, and unfortunately, he got. His hand stuck in the cookie jar, if you will, and the stewards took him down. And unfortunately, it wasn't just a first to second or anything. It was a first to fourth.
Yeah, exactly. Two good races. And actually, it was a fun card overall. And it didn't you looking at it today, in fact, you come right back. You got a very nice set today. All stakes pick four involving the Indiana Breds. And even before the pick four starts today, Bill, you've got a nice maiden race. The open company, you know, two-year-old fillies, and some with experience. You got about four or five that have already started, quite a few first-time starters, including a commissioner daughter that kind of caught my eye a little bit. And John Ortiz with Queen of Verona, 8-1. I don't know if that price is going to hold, but you know, commissioner sending out his first-time starters with his first crop, they've been live pretty much from the time the first one hit the racetrack.
Yeah, it was a tough morning line to make, that's for sure. You know, I had hopes and prayers at 7-2, and I was kind of more defaultist because, you know, she finished second in a couple of the third races. But you know, we do have some scratches in the race: the 6, T-Bird Encore, the 7 Morningstar Dust, and the 10. Julie's Encore from the main part of the field. The 11 Promises Forever does draw into the race. And then you can scratch the 12, 13, and 14. So, by default, I think Queen of Verona, if I had to redo the morning line, probably be, I would say 6, but I can certainly see how you think that she can get bets. $20,000 purchase, commissioner out of a forestry mare. The one thing I would, from a handicapping point of view, that I did notice was the fact that he got Marcelino Pedrosa to ride, and from the limited number of times those two hook up, they've won a couple times. So that might be a good omen that Ortiz put Pedrosa on a first-time starter. Other first-time starters in the race, I think it's, I have to look this one up, Acor. The one horse, daughter of Munnings, cost $90,000 earlier this year. The workouts down in Kentucky have been pretty darn solid. from a timing perspective, fast enough on paper, it looks like, and evenly spaced. And I could see that Philly running good at first asking, and Scott Hansen's got McKenzie's girl, puts the veteran Jesus Caston on board, daughter of Take Charge Indy out of a Yankee Victor Mayer. The Dam has produced a couple of turf winners. I always like seeing that. I also like seeing bullet gate workouts as well. Got one on July 27th down at Keeneland to indicate some running ability. So McKenzie's girl I thought was interesting as well. But I would not argue with your pick at all, Steve, Queen of Verona in race number four.
You mentioned Acor and Cherie DeVoe, and Cherie,
yeah.
she's back at the Spectrum training at Churchill Downs Training Center, where for many years as Chuck Simon's assistant, Cherie very familiar with the Spectrum over there. I love it, and this is the third starter that she's going to have at Indiana. You mentioned Marcelina Pedroza and John Ortiz. Those numbers are frightening. I mean, together, over the last couple of years, he's reached out for Pedroza six times. They've won three races together, and three out of five of them have come at Indiana. And a big, fat, positive ROI, too. I mean, these are not all, short-priced favorites. So Pedroza, clearly, a bit of a go-to for John Ortiz.
Yeah, exactly. That would be the one thing that that from a handicapping perspective, that's something that you always should take a look at is those, see who those trainers like to use. Lots of different instances, and in this case, the fact that Pedroza, who's winning races in bunches at Indiana Grand as a board, is obviously a very good thing for those connections in that fourth race.
Well, I see you got Declan Carroll riding in town too, and Deck, who had a terrific Ellis meet, and has also been riding at Kentucky Downs. He's riding for Dan Pitts in here, and although Declan 1-for-21 actually at the times he's come over to ride, he's had 21 mounts. It does have 6 seconds and 4/3, so some of that is probably a couple of those seconds that might have gone his way under different circumstances. We understand. Declan Carroll may come to New York this winter. He may spend the winter at Aqueduct. So the son of Davey Carroll, and he can't get any taller than he already is. Declan needs to stay at that height, Bill.
Is he Deshaun Parker height, like 5'10"? I don't know how tall he is.
He's tracking that way.
Okay.
He's tracking that way, yes, as it happens.
Joe O'Brien height?
Well, he's got that Trevor McCarthy – Mike McCarthy,
yeah.
That, Richard Leori type, type of a angular, long legs, long arms. But I think he's got to stay about dad's height and weight. He can't. I think his mother Kim, 5'8", because he's listening. Declan just sent me a text.
Yeah.
He's 5'8" officially.
Hopefully he's not texting while he's driving. You know?
No, I hope not. Well, he's on third encore, the Birdstone Filly for Dan Pitts today. And Dan Pitts has sent two horses over so far at the meet, and he's had 2 seconds. So from very limited starters, he's actually had a couple of good runners, and I'd bet that Deck has been maybe getting on this horse in the mornings on occasion too. So there's that two. I just that 2-year-old race. That's a good race. They're running for 31,000, and you got some nice babies in there. Let's talk about the stakes sequence.
Yeah,
it starts with the City of Anderson.
Yes, City of Anderson. Larry Ravelli ships one in from Arlington. Belize Saheed made her the 2-to-1 favorite, winner of a maiden claiming race by 8 lengths. But remember, it was just a field of four. Yeah, she won it easily, but she didn't really have to work that hard early on. She just kind of just overwhelmed the field. And, this race, you're not going to get away with opening up by 6 lengths or anything like that. There's plenty of early speed horses in the race. The one I like the best in here, probably one of my better bets of the day, if not my best bet of the day, will be the three-horse Nothing But Flowers with trainer Jeff Greenhill, winner of Indiana Bred Maiden Race on July 26th. What I liked about it, showed speed, didn't get hyper when another horse sprinted out to an early lead, just stayed calm. And then Joe Ramos called upon Nothing But Flowers on the turn, took over the lead in upper stretch, and won under, I can't say it was a hand ride, but it was under very mild pressure. So I was very high on Nothing But Flowers going into that race, and of course winning by 5 lengths did nothing to quench my desire to play her next time out, and today is the day. Lady Ally for trainer Tim Gleishaw for Iron Horse Racing Stable, the same owners as Bucaro. Lady Ally went off at the 7-5 favorite August 16th, was able to really didn't do anything wrong in the race, and so that was a very positive debut. They got the win. Fernando de la Cruz was aboard for the debut win, is aboard again today. You know, she was asked probably a little bit more than Nothing But Flowers, but Lady Ally, you can see that she does have a lot of talent, and she's another one of the top contenders in the city of Anderson. But for me, I'm going to try Nothing But Flowers in that fifth race.
Well, and a little bit of a couple of different angles in here that include some turf to dirt, the Mike Lauer, Penny Lauer, misremembered filly, Don't You Remember, from that standpoint, Release the Heat, Larry Rivelli on the outside, off the synthetic. I thought, you know, Lady Alley, obviously, with Gleishaw, was a big player, too. Let's talk about the Hillsdale, and these are the two-year-old boys, the Indiana Breds.
Yes, Tim Gleishaw has got another one in this race, and he's got the Two Last Words. It was tough making the winning line. I didn't know, obviously Two Last Words can be one of the favorites. I didn't know if I was going to make him the favorite. Ironically, in career start number 5, this is the first time he has faced just Indiana Breds. He broke the maiden open company in his debut. They tried a stakes company a couple of times, a fourth and a sixth place finish. Sandwich in there is a second and open company allowance race, an entry-level allowance race on July 24th. So I made him the slight favorite in there. My tie is Gem, though, for trainer Tony Duran, a son of gemologist, ran great in that race on August the 17th. I almost made him the favorite, then I'm like, well, you know, Gleishaw's horse has been in some stakes races, open stakes races. So I went back and forth. But I put one at 9-5, the other one at 2-1, and Mai Tai's Gem. It would probably be my pick in that race. But then you got a Rampage, the three horse for trainer Ethan West, has wired two fields in a row, defeated open company last time out. And I think Nano came back to win. The horse was second in that race in August 20, came back to win an allowance race next time out. So that race was flattered a little bit. Hasn't gotten the best numbers, if you will, but he's won by daylight in both of those races. So he needs to be respected as well. He'll be the one to catch probably in this race. But that's a look at a few of the contenders in the Hillsdale Stakes as race number 6.
Well, and you mentioned 2-1 on the outside, the 10-horse Mai Tai's Gem, the gemologist for Antonio Duran and Rodney Prescott. And, boy, it sure feels like, if not lone speed, then controlling speed at the very least. And I got to think that Prescott sends and that he proves a little tough to catch in there. That's what kind of caught my eye.
Okay.
Same could be said when we look at the Merrillville. This is fillies and mares, 3 and ups. All these races are 3/4, and from the rail, Ever Wonder. Isn't Ever Wonder a wire candidate?
Well, I don't. Yeah, I mean, if she's going to win, she has the rail, and then Unbridled Class has got a lot of early speed as well. Unbridled Class in the Shelby County Stakes had the rail, didn't break as alertly as she has in the past. And, you know, rushed up there, 21 4/5 for the quarter, and just got a little bit weary late. Got caught by Expect Indy, who's also in this race for Cipriano Contreras. Expect Indy, I'll be honest, I didn't think that Expect Indy would be this good of a sprinter, but her two races this year have been just spectacular. And so I've tempered my my belief and changed it quite a bit. You know, Expect Indy can win races from 6 furlongs to a mile 16th. And she's in this race in the Maryville Stakes, and you know she should get a great pace to run at. You know, anyone ever wonder? It's got a send from the rail for Bob Gorham and you know unbridled class before the Shelby County Stakes earlier this season, which is making a mockery out of some really good fields in some money allowance races earlier this season. And it's going to be fascinating to see the cat and mouse game or just pure speed from both of these fillies, Ever Wonder and Unbridled Class. And I expect Indy should get another great trip in here. And those are the big guns in the Maryville Stakes.
Well, Expect Indy, who's really had a productive career, particularly she's been terrific at Indiana. And hard for me not to root for my man Andy Berg. Gumpster Stable, the one and only, and this is a nice group. There's also some collapse potential here, and even a horse like Hey Little Bit underneath, maybe to pick up a piece, right?
Especially in the Tri and Supers, because you know you got Ever Wonder and Unbridled Class, and whoever doesn't like win that battle, those type of horses tend to not, you know. They lose that battle, they tend not to do that well. And Hey Little Bit would be one I'd be using all over the place underneath in the Tries and Supers, and you know probably trying to key in one of those spots and then getting a little bit of a price in the Maryville Stakes.
Well, and from the rail coming in from Thistledown, Dr. Gorham with Ever Wonder. This is a good race. It's a terrific sequence. The Brickyard closes out the All Stakes Pick Four, and these are the boys doing the same thing. The Indiana Bred's going three quarters.
Yep, Double Tough is the even money favorite in the race, winner of the William Henry Harrison Stakes, and stayed off a pretty hot pace and just absolutely blew the field away. He is. I don't know how we're going to beat him. This is just one, you know, that he has enough. He now has a little bit more tactical early speed than he did early in his career, ironically enough. You know, he finished fourth in this race last year, but he has just been super sharp since getting claimed for $16,000 at Churchill in mid-June by trainer Randy Matthews. And his two wins, he just couldn't have won any easier. That being said, who are some other horses in the race? You know, Operation Stevie ran up against Double Tough in the William Henry Harrison Stakes. I'd be a little higher in Operation Stevie. I really probably should have gotten second in that race. He didn't. But anytime he gets any sort of real pace, he's a definite contender. He loves to come from off the pace. Loves Indiana Grand, obviously. And Operation Stevie it probably would be a strong second choice in the race. Whole Lot of Chocolate's kind of like the mystery to me, Steve. For Amos, they put the horse in the A.J. Foyt Stakes, and he did not like the turf. He kind of was getting out, going into the turn, and caused a pretty big jam-up, ironic for a race that's named after A.J. Foyt, and caused a lot of havoc, and it was basically eased in the race. And that was on September 3rd. So the fact he's back in 8 days tells me everything's fine. I just think that he didn't really like the turf, and is back sprinting. He showed a lot of early talent in his career back in 2018. He even came back as a winner earlier this season, and then won an open allowance race on June 18th. So he's interesting. He's you know, taking his big step up in class, taking on the likes of Double Tough and Operation Stevie, since he really, you know, last race is kind of just like a throwout race. But he's kind of like the wild card in the race. And even horses like Plainfield, who has run big races in the past, he didn't do it last time out. But on his best day, he knows how to compete against this level, and he's an interesting price at 12-1. But Double Tough is going to be a prohibitive favorite in the race, and he's going to be really hard to beat. The only one, like I said, I really think might have a chance just because he's a wild card, is Whole Lot of Chocolate for Amos. Double Tough could be a single for a lot of people in the Brickyard Stakes.
Well, especially because you want to use a couple different ones, sprinkle around a little bit in the early races. But Double Tough, well named, and a very clever claim going back against Indiana Bread Company. Randy Matthews plucked him at Churchill out of that spot. Very, 6-year old, and a horse that seems to be a bit. I don't want to call him overly hardy, because he does have a couple of rest gaps that he does need time in spots. He's taken time off, but seems like he's good now. You know who I thought was useful in here underneath was Jova, the 5.
Yeah.
From Garcia. It seems to just always run well, and won't take much a repeat of that last race. Jova could get a piece underneath at a fat price.
Yeah, I've been waiting for him to run back that race on June the 5th, in which he beat Open Company Allowance Optional Claimers. In the last two starts, he was solid second choice or third choice, whatever it was, and he's finished second. But I was really kind of hoping that he would have won one of those two races as opposed to finishing second. But if you're talking about exotic bets and whatnot, there's worse 20-1 shots out there. I'll say that.
Exactly. Well, Bill, it's a nice card later, and looking forward. They first post 2:15 Eastern time, and the stakes sequence starts at 4:07. The all-stakes pick 4, the Indiana Breds under the spotlight this afternoon, plus that good Open Company maiden special. Bill, I appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. I'm going to go drive the racetrack right now.
Nice. Bill Downs won on Twitter, and the action at Indiana Grand, the Indiana Bred all-stakes pick 4 today. Take part, and we're going to take a break here. Bottom of the hour coming. We got Seth Merrow to join us, but I hear that couple of things. Casey is slid into the director's chair back behind the board, and so that's great that Casey's come in this morning. Deja has been busy since Monday with us, but Casey is there, and I guess John came in. I guess John Parada is around, so we got to get John, I think, on the mic, right, Casey? Is that what we're going to do? Is that our plan? A little Parada? Or did John just come to say hi? Well, I'll find out during the break. Yes, all right, John is going to say hello. And all right, so John will join us after the break. And if KC's got access to the mic too, we can say hi to Case. Back after this, we'll close out the busy Wednesday get-together, and John can provide some perspective, I think, as well on the Jockey Club proposal. John certainly has bred enough prominent horses in his life. We'll come back, and we'll run to the top of the hour after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back, Sirius Satellite Radio, Sirius XM, Sirius XM Online. Coming to you, I'm coming to you from New York, but down in the studio, it's a buzz of activity with Casey behind the board today and John Parada swinging through, and I think John is there to say hello.
I am here to say hello, Steve. How are you?
There we go. Sidle up to the mic. Good. Good. I didn't know you were head in that direction.
Well, I knew Casey was in the behind the board again, so I wanted to stop by and see him, and he looks great, and he's doing well, and knock wood, let's keep going forward. So,
well, exactly. And you, what about you too? You've got a little thing, right? When's your little procedure?
No, I'm good for
You're
now.
Good?
My next procedure is a Aer Lingus to Ireland next month. that's my next procedure.
I love it. I love it.
I missed Laytown today. Laytown is the one meet that fascinates me. You know, it's on the beach. They only run it one day a year. So if you miss it, you got to wait another year. And I just encourage people to go. It's quite an extravaganza because there are 10,000 people there at the beach watching horses, you know. And you can see as far out into the Irish Sea as you want. It's just above Dublin, and it's really fun. Anybody's got a checklist of racetracks they're going to visit only once a year. Don't miss it. So,
yeah, and it always between that and the snow race at St. Moritz, and I suppose the Palio too. Those are like three things that always seem to make the rounds on social media.
Yeah, exactly. But looking forward to getting back over there again. We had a trip planned for this week for Champions Weekend, which is coming up, but had to rearrange some plans, so we're going to go next month instead.
Well, and you've also got tell everybody about now the runner that debuted on Saturday, and
that was her second run actually.
Second
Kitten on the Keys. Yes, she's a Kitten's Joy filly that I bought at a Breeze Up sale for members of the Dublin Racing Club. A number of members wanted to have equity in a horse that was running, so we purchased a nice, a lovely filly, like I said, by Kitten's Joy, very American pedigree. Her dam is a half sister to a Starlet, Hollywood Starlet winner. She's got grade one, all the way down. And, we're looking forward to getting her, going longer races. The way it works over there is you really need to give your horses some experience. You know, they're running in, I think the first race she ran in had 23 horses in it. She finished sixth. Which most of the time you beat that many horses, you've won a race. Or you might have won two. And she came back and ran again the other day and got beat five lengths and finished 11th in a 20 horse race. So, there's always a few excuses for them the first couple of times because they're straightaways, they're out and out sprints, finishing uphill most of the time. And, we look forward. I think our next race will be 7/8 or 7/8 or a mile, and a 7/8 race over there. If you're trying to consider form, and I think Seth and a lot of the handicapping guys will tell you that they look at horses that come from Europe, they go further in the States than they do over there. So in other words, a horse that's run 7/8 or a mile over there will easily get a mile and an eighth or over here. It's just because of the tracks. Every track is completely different. They're downhill, they're left-hand turns, they're right-hand turns, they're uphill finishes, and they're so dependent on the weather. They test the ground all the time, and they want it to be soft. So that's another thing that you have to factor in. If they haven't had rain for a while, they'll water the course. They'll actually be out there and soak it until it's soft. And I think that has a lot to do with the lower mortality rate that horses have in Europe, because they're running on very soft ground all the time. It's very forgiving, gives their chance for their bones to set up and mature. But a lot of fun. Anyway, I hope to get you and Tina over there too.
We will.
It's pretty soon.
Without fail. The timing of this visit too fits kind of the news of the day, with Keeneland now in the third leg of the book one, mm-hmm. but certainly the Jockey Club announcement. I'm curious your thoughts. I hope you had a chance to hear Rob Whiteley yesterday, and guys like you and Rob have a historic perspective on this kind of a topic and an understanding, and I'm of the way in which the commercial market. The way it was in the 80s and then the way it's morphed subsequently. What's your take on this?
Rob Whiteley is one of my heroes in the horse business. He's one of the smartest guys. As my friend Arnold Kirkpatrick used to say, he's wiser than a tree full of owls. Rob's insight into the game has always been brilliant. And I didn't get to hear him. I was on the road this morning, so I didn't get to hear him, but I'll go back and listen to it. I talked to Rob occasionally. I actually spoke with him the other day. He's helping me on the book that I'm working on right now. But my perspective on it is it's been a long time coming, and it's a great idea to do that, and it should be done. I was making some notes the other day about historical's perspective for this type of thing. And when you look back, Northern Dancer, I believe he was a 32 or 34 member syndicate. He was a syndicated horse, owned mostly by Winfields, but he was a syndicated horse. And I don't believe he bred more than 40 mares ever in any year. His average foal crop was around 30 to 32. So if you say he was, 80 to 90% fertility, that would make those figures jive. And his stud fee in the late 80s, we at Due Process paid $1 million one time for a no guarantee breeding to Northern Dancer. But what does this tell you? It tells you that there was a supply and demand factor that existed, and that the people who recognized quality in horses recognized him as the pinnacle of success. So I think what happened was, after that, you would talk to people and they'd say, oh, I've got a Northern Dancer. They'd say, really? And they'd say, well, he's not a Northern Dancer. He's a son of Northern. He's by a son or by a grandson. It's not the same thing. And as someone once told me, Mrs. Sullivan had 13 kids, but she only had one John L. And that was Northern Dancer. So I guess the point is that when you have those stallions like Northern Dancer, Sadler's Wells, Galileo, Mr. Prospector, Raise a Native, Bold Rule, those signs that demonstrate the extreme quality, that's the ones that we want to carry on the breed, and to try to diversify and dilute the bloodlines is probably counterproductive. So I'm in favor of it. I mean, obviously it's a market thing, and you don't want to be too restrictive of it. But if you look at standard breeds, what's happened to them? They're ruined by the proliferation of just the several niches.
Well, they did this. They've made the move to it, and going to be very interesting after the sale to see where people line up, because it was funny. The timing was obviously made to coincide with the sale so that it would foster discussion. However, a lot of the people that you would really want to hear from are tabling their thoughts until, you know, after they get through with the sale, because, you know, the sale is the priority. And even Sid, who's never at a loss for opinion, Sid even said he really wants to digest it and get, you know, really the same feedback that the Jockey Club is asking for and you know, soliciting. So I'm fascinated by it and what it, you know, and what the intended and unintended consequences might be. So we'll keep following. In the meantime, there's a voracious appetite, John, for expensive Yearlings right now. It's unbelievable.
Amazing. The Curlin at 4.1 million is... Fooled me.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's right. Well, John, I'm thrilled you came by. And Casey, I think we tried this a couple of weeks ago when Case was in, to see if that mic is working.
Hey, Steve, I'm here.
There he is.
How you doing?
You sound good.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I feel good. We're on the road to recovery.
Yeah. Wow. This is a welcome sound to have the band back together. To have Casey on the
back
glass.
In the garage. We're back in the garage
with exactly. The original members.
Yeah. Exactly. They had a nice function for you on Friday night. It looked like
overwhelming. My friends in the entertainment industry down here in South Florida put together somewhat of a benefit for me. And a lot of entertainers that I've worked with over the years, and people flew in from the Caribbean, and it was really overwhelming. A lot of love in the building.
No, oh, I love it. By the way, you mentioned the Caribbean, but you know, you go to, you've at least a couple times a year have gone to Bahamas.
Absolutely.
Are your friends and what is everything?
It's treacherous over there. Some people I haven't heard from yet. I'm looking forward to hearing from them. But, you know, communication is very spotty. So, you know, we're checking websites to see if people have checked in. But if there's no phone, there's no web, there's, you know, so it's day by day. But, you know, every time we find out somebody else is okay, you know, you kind of do a jump for joy and hope that you can find other friends and friends who've become family, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know a lot of New Year's, when you and I are off, you've gone over for New Year's Eve,
right.
Weekends and so forth, and I thought of you, and we haven't had a chance to talk about it. The scenes are just
I mean, they're just
The areas that were really affected, that Marsh Harbor and the other area, I kind of have gone more to the capital cities, so more of the people that I associate with are there. But yeah, that Marsh Harbor is completely devastated. Yeah.
Well, and you know, since we're talking for the first time in ages on air, gotta just acknowledge the job that Deja and Jolan have done when you've been unavailable, because it's been. I don't think people know or realize, Kay, that I mean, it's been pretty miraculous that we've been okay to broadcast at all since, you know, midwinter.
Yeah, you know, every day I hold my breath that they're able to get the show on time and able to make it through. When 12 o'clock comes, I breathe a sigh of relief, but they've done it, you know, every day for months, and I really appreciate them being able to come in and take over that portion of the studio.
Well, it's been amazing, and it was funny because when I was there this winter, and you said Jolan had been saying for years, I should be the backup engineer,
right.
And you kind of laughed and shrugged, and then sure enough, it turned out she was I guess watching the whole time.
No, I mean when I got sick, I had to train her up real quick, so it wasn't like she was just able to slide in, but she definitely did a great job. Between her and Deja. And, well, Deja's a radio professional. She works in the industry. So, you know, that was not even a hesitation. I knew that she would be able to do it. But, yeah, they both did a great job.
Well, having experienced this goofy thing with my eye, I can only imagine, and I know that, you know, when we've talked the few days that you've been on, it knocks you right out. I mean, I'm still taking hour and a half naps in the afternoons after the show, because it's been, so I can only imagine. I mean, for you, it's got to be even just more taxing, and you've got, you know, you got a gauntlet yet to run, but you know that everybody, just a landslide of support and love and appreciation from the audience to you, and you know, I can't wait to see you. We're supposed to come down, actually, at some point this fall.
Okay,
for a weekend. So I'll probably get there at some point soon.
Sounds good.
Our man, Uptown, KC, back on the board, and John Parada in town, too. Remarkable. Just came together perfectly. And we got about 15 to the top of the hour. Let's get Seth Merrow in here. He's part of the extended family, and we'll get some thoughts from Seth. John, when am I going to see you?
I'll be here in Florida through the fall, Steve, and looking forward to seeing you if you come down.
Well, I should tell you this off air, but we got to come down to see Dr. Bisgen. Who's in rough shape.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Alex is such a nice man. Alex and Marianne, wonderful people.
If you get a chance to, when I had Charlotte, we had Charlotte on TV closing weekend at Saratoga, and we sent a big shout out. We missed them the first time. They haven't been at Saratoga in decades, and Tina and I promised Alex and Marianne that we'd come down.
All right. Well,
yeah, if you get a chance to,
definitely
reach out.
I definitely will.
Nice.
All right. Otherwise, see you when I see you.
Absolutely. It'll be sooner than later too. John Parada, everybody, and some insight as to the Jockey Club initiative. And John can speak to a lot of these issues about the bloodlines and. You know, not so much reviving bloodlines as, you know, just spreading diversity around as much as they possibly can. And I also thought that one thing I haven't didn't get a chance to do with Sid, John, in fact, if you're there, one thing that occurred to me with this is that. Some of the some of the stallion owners might make shuttle deals to, you know, potentially offset what could be lost income. And under that scenario, you would think that there's potential to bring, you know, down the road to bring brood mares and bring offspring with international flavor with some of those stallions. You know, the, given how many imports we're seeing, I mean, just look at what Seth Klarman did with his purchases in Europe this past year, last year, that Chad Brown is fashioning into, you know, success. So it might be very healthy long term to, you know, spread North American stallion progeny around the globe and then get hybrid, you know, what a hybrid vigor, right, as they That's call it.
Exactly. Well, if you look back in the history of thoroughbred racing, I mean, even just back as far as the early 20th century, when men like the Hancocks, Bull Hancock, Arthur Hancock, were bringing horses from Europe to stallion prospects and trying to diversify the bloodlines, but they were always trying to find the top quality. They weren't just trying to breed more horses. And this is what we went through, up until the 70s and 80s, where the full crops started getting bigger and bigger. I think Fred Hooper was the one that proposed at one point that the breeders band together and come up with a fund to buy the cheaper mares that were going through the Ocala sales and sterilize them, take them out of the gene pool, just to get rid of the lower quality genes that were getting passed on and on. And so the people have always tried to do what they can to improve the breed. And this is just another move in that. I mean, I don't know whether it works or not, but it looks to me like it's a good idea. Some place to start. You have to do something rather than nothing.
Is there a line, John, or a family that it is not getting enough attention right now that could, you know, could benefit from this? And, you know, I brought this up a little bit. I referenced it in today's conversation with Sid, actually, about, non-Phalaris families. And, you know, you have to go find female families, essentially, if you're looking for non-Phalaris blood.
Well, yeah, Coolmore is a great place to look if you want to find the examples, because they had gotten so concentrated in the line from Northern Dancer, Sadler's Wells, Galileo. Now, then they're all of their stallions were starting to become sons of that same sire line. And they're such a huge operation that they need to completely diversify the bloodlines constantly, because they produce so many top quality racehorses. So they couldn't be breeding daughters of Galileo to sons of Galileo all of a sudden, you know. So that they've started trying to change some of their stallions to mix, and it will work. So it's kind of, Sid has probably addressed that as well.
Well, and when we think about imports, and one of the names that Sid brought up was Cairo, and you know, some of the things that John Nehru did. Mm-hmm. But you also I always think of No Double and No Home. Mm-hmm. in this vein, right? I mean, that sure. Those are the kinds of imports that were very important, and you know, it's funny, everybody talks about the female families, and the blue hen, you know, the blue hens are they dot the stud book. Invariably, there's an import tied to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It's the best way to, you know, it's the best way to keep, you know, your own bloodstock is by introducing fresh. It's one of the things that I don't talk about it all that often, but it is one of the things that, along with handicapping and horseplay, that really drew me into the game. So I that's when one of the people are wondering why I'm driving this conversation so much this, you know, these first 3 days since the thing was announced on Friday. It's just that I'm intrigued, and I've read, you know, I continue to read a lot about breeding, and then, you know, relationships with people like you and Rob and, well, John Nayrud himself. I mean, have also helped me understand. I think we've got Seth Merrow kicking around now in the background.
You do. I'm here.
All right. We had, for whatever reason, we were struggling to connect with you, but here you are, and you got to talk to Casey?
I did, briefly. I didn't get a chance to say welcome back to him. It was great to hear him jump on with you earlier. I agree with you. He sounds good, and so we certainly like that.
Well, you sound good, too. We've only got about 4 or 5 minutes to talk, but what do you got? You must have something interesting for us.
Just in general, I mean, I could go back to last weekend in the stakes action. It was good to see Marticia win after the race up at Saratoga, where every trip handicapper in the world wrote it down, and then followed up running fourth in the next stake at Saratoga. So it was good to see Marticia win down at Kentucky Downs this weekend on what was a great stakes card for them.
Well, and we talked to Rusty Arnold late on Monday, and we kind of glossed over it. We only had about 10 minutes to hit all of his successes, and Rusty's hitting on every cylinder. I mean, to be honest, that turf course up until the rain they got yesterday, today, that turf course was giving it up really to speed, which is unusual there. Usually the speed horses are confronted, you know, halfway up the hill, and there were more horses on or near the lead winning at Kentucky Downs the last 3 days, the last three cards, than we usually see.
Yeah, I was in handicapping over the weekend. That was one of the tracks we were looking at, and you're right. Turning for home, you think these horses would get swallowed up with that stretch, but they were holding on for the most part. There were a few races where some horses made up some ground in the stretch, and even those, typically there could be a long price on the front end, and it wouldn't wind up worse than third in there. But for the most part, yeah, on the front end, certainly that those horses were holding on. I'll also toss out Friday. I did the opening day at Laurel. That was one of the tracks we were looking at in the afternoon. And I'll just tell people, keep your eyes on it. It can't decide off the one day. But there were a couple of nice winners that came in from Colonial Downs, and there was another horse at a long price that held on for a good third. I'm going to be interested to see what these horses coming out of Colonial do as they move on to other tracks. It's, as I say, it's just a one day at Laurel, but it was enough to make me pay attention maybe a little bit.
That's a valuable insight, and to get out ahead of it, because they'll be coming back to run, and of course quite a few of them. The Maryland Jockey Club was not exactly too nice about horsemen going down to Colonial. They were rattling sabers as that organization is wont to do, and I'm sure they will welcome them back now to run just to fill out the fall and winter card. But yeah, good point.
Keeping an eye on. Yeah. I think, like I say, I can't decide for sure from the one day, but the one day certainly looked good. Also, let me tell, we're headed up to Woodbine for the Woodbine Mile, which
yes,
they're drawing, what, about 5 minutes? OTV-TV, Saturday and Sunday, we will be up at Woodbine, so looking forward to that.
This is what, like the fourth year in a row?
Yeah, we've been making the Queen's Plate and the Woodbine Mile for, I think this is the fourth year in a row. It's at least three, but I think you're right. I think it's the fourth year. They treat us very well up there. They tend to invite a number of people up there, spread the word about their big days. And now with that inner turf course, I'm looking forward to getting some of the nice turf racing on that course as well to make for what will probably be a couple of nice turf-laden cards. And clearly, obviously, those of us up here who are lucky enough to be at Saratoga throughout the meet are anxiously awaiting Gott Stormy to see if she can follow up the two incredible performances at Saratoga with a Woodbine Mile.
Did you look at any Belmont today?
I did. I looked at the late pick five, and since time was late, I was kind of looking around for something maybe clever to toss out. Because really, I think the short prices are kind of logical. But in one of the races, where did I have it? I think it was in... There was a horse moving out of state bred allowance company into an open company. It's an angle like, the fifth race, Ascender, 6-1. Just over the years, that's an angle I've liked quite a bit. Moving out of state bred allowance company into an open claimer, an open conditional claimer yet. I like the favorite in the race, Moinespun, but I think if you're going to play around a little bit, Ascender, number 3 in race 5, could be interesting.
6-1 for Michelle Nevin, the 3-horse, Ascender. And, of course, Moinespun is, that's the Wicked Strong sibling.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah, that's
right. Oh, no, is that Moin Abbey? Moin Abbey or Moinespun? I think Moin Abbey is the brother, is the sibling.
Okay, all right.
This might not be. Yeah, I think Moin Abbey. Or is that the dam? Do you have the PPs in front of you?
The dam is Abbey Street.
Interesting. All right, that might be. I know that Wicked Strong's got the sibling was Moin something. Well, we'll have Moin tomorrow. Seth Merrow, everybody, the face of Capital Go TV, and John Parada popped in today. How about that? Out of a complete surprise, didn't know that we were going to hear from John. Bill Downs, and of course Sid, Maggie Kimmett with the Real Ryder Cup, and Pete Fornatel, who is going to be with Seth up at Woodbine. I'm sure you are. Why wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Have Tommy Masses, and you'll be sure to hear from the FCC minutes later. I love it. And of course KC back too. Unbelievable. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody.